Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Our politics on the Corlin Economics Report. We're going to start out this first segment a couple of ways. Number one, we're going to talk a little bit about where the election stands right now vis-a-vis Nevada, Arizona, and we should weigh in probably a little bit on Georgia. It's not looking good. We're going to get into a discussion of where the Republican Party, where I believe the Republican Party stands right now, and where Jim believes the Republican Party stands right now. Now, as we sit here recording this show on Friday, there are hundreds of thousands of votes left to be counted in Arizona, and there are hundreds of thousands of votes left to be counted in Nevada. That is totally inexcusable when you got a state like Florida, which has a greater population than either Arizona or Nevada, and they were virtually done the day of the election. So I am a little bit unhappy, quite frankly, with the election people in Nevada and Arizona. Jimmy, how do you feel?
No, I agree completely. It's unacceptable, and it's just inexcusable that these states are incapable of actually getting a decision within 24 hours.
Yeah.
And what it does, what happens when you do this and you drag this out, it really undermines faith and confidence in the electoral system. And it doesn't matter which party you're with.
Yeah.
People just look at it and say, okay, this isn't good.
Jim, let's talk a little bit about where we actually do stand right now. Which party? I believe the Democrats are slightly ahead in terms of the quest for Senate seats. I believe the Democrats are just slightly ahead in both Arizona and Nevada. Do you have the exact numbers handy, Jim?
I don't have the exact numbers right now because they're actually changing as we're talking, recording. And so we do know that there won't be a decision. They've already announced they won't decide until the first, maybe Monday or Tuesday. You won't have the final numbers. But what we do know is that in Nevada, Adam Laxalt, he's ahead by a few thousand votes. That's changed a little bit on the last vote drop. But some of the areas that they believe are more conservative are outstanding. But at the same time, Clark County votes, I can tell from experience in the state of Washington, when Christine Gregoire and Dino Rossi ran for governor, over 20 years ago, when they first started this type of mail-in system and these type of ballots, Christine Gregoire lost initially, but in King County, they kept finding. They did three recounts until they finally found a box of 100 ballots, and she somehow came out ahead of Dino Rossi.
Yeah.
Now, that was a template for what type of changes the Democrats could make in order to manage the system through mail-in ballots, drop boxes, under the guise of getting more voters involved. But what it does is it actually creates the opportunity to provide, to carry ballots to people's homes, have very good organization in order to collect those or get people to vote a certain way and get them in there, and then the count can change. And you really have to question the system in these areas. And it's very clear that the key places we have problems in America right now are places where they've put in this type of system.
Yeah.
Either the mail-in, the drop box, the early voting. And in many places, you don't even, in Washington State, you don't even have a place to go cast a vote. There is no voting location. You have to go drop your into a box or mail it in.
Yeah.
And that becomes very problematic when it comes to validating IDs, cleansing voter rolls. And as I've told you and told our listeners before, last year in Washington State, my wife and I both received two ballots each because we had moved a couple blocks away and the auditor sent ballots to both locations. Now, that would be easy to cheat through that type of a system.
Jim, let me ask you a question. I'm starting to feel like the voting process in America right now is very inefficient, but I'm not starting to feel that it's necessarily dishonest. How do you feel about my statement there? Do you think it's dishonest? I don't think it is.
I think in key areas it's dishonest. And yeah. I think there's a lot of evidence that has proven that. And that is videotape of buying votes and delivering votes.
In the Orlando area, for example, although in the overall count in Florida, what happened in Orlando in terms of harvesting votes, et cetera, really didn't affect the race very much in Florida.
Well, not this time.
No.
Because what had happened, the DeSantis administration in Florida in general had clamped down on some of these very problematic areas. Remember, yeah. Broward County in the 2020 election was a total disaster, and DeSantis had to fire the election chief down there. So he put in place a oversight group that actually went out and investigated and found this information. And when you do that, it stops people from cheating the system.
Yeah.
When you do not prosecute those types of crimes, then they will go on until someone stops them.
Yeah.
And that's the problem in many of the Democratic-controlled states, because in fact, and it could be the Republicans in sometime in the future, who knows, but the Democrats right now, when they control the authority to review these problems, it's just like the DOJ in Washington, D.C. right now. They're targeting conservatives and Republicans because they have the power, but they are allowing Democrat, progressive ideologies to run rampant. And if you don't stop it, if you don't actually step in and, make the system equitable and make justice equal, and in these types of areas, you never have trust and faith in it. And that's the reality that we're facing right now. The system appears to be incredibly corrupt, in my view.
Okay. But I personally maintain that the system right now is relatively honest. And I think the results in Arizona and Nevada, kind of prove that. I think that the argument that a lot of the Democrats are making is that if you question the voting process, you're really questioning the concept of a democracy. And I would say there may be a little bit of truth to that.
I would argue 100% the opposite.
And the
reason why I argue that, Al, is because if you don't question it, you just accept this and just accept the system when one particular uniparty control has control over something, then you're going to walk yourself into tyranny. And you have to question it. And oh, by the way, you have to be able to question it. And you have to prove.
I'm not saying you should. I'm not saying you should not be able to question it. And I'm not saying that at all. All I'm saying is that the election, as I see it this time, I don't think that what happened, as depicted in 10,000 Mules or whatever the hell the name of that movie and book was, I don't think that happened this time.
We don't know yet, because it's way too early to tell in some of these areas and who was investigating and who was watching. So it took months before, actually it took a year and a half before 2000 Mules came out, because they had to do a tremendous amount of research. So it's hard to say. It's really hard to say at this point. I would like to think that it's honest and trustworthy, but there's just too much information and evidence for me that says we have to really question it and step in and stop some of the ridiculous things.
Okay.
Let's look very quickly. Let's just say, it's a 48 Democrats right now, 49 Republicans. That includes Alaska, which both candidates are Republicans. And then we've got three outstanding races to make the determination.
Right.
And it's going to be a really close one.
Yeah, it's going to be really close. Yeah, very, very close. But I would say, I think it's a relatively cleaner system this time than it was in 2020. I mean, I heard some numbers from 2020 that really don't make any sense whatsoever, but I'm not hearing those numbers necessarily here in this particular.
We got to be right back, right now.
2022. No, not quite yet, but now we do. Yeah, we got a commercial break as of right now. You guys, right back.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Second segment of KER Politics. I want to give an opinion right now, and I want Jim to do a serious rebuttal because I know he's not going to like my opinion, and maybe a lot of you guys aren't going to like it either. But I feel very strongly about this. I think if Donald Trump, I don't think he's doing the Republican Party any favors right now. I think he's too divisive, and I think that we need, I think we need him to be a Marlon Brando godfather. I think we need him to be the de facto head of the Republican Party by blessing people like, for example, Ron DeSantis. I think if he stepped down in his mind and did that, he'd have a much better name in the history of our country. Jimmy, what do you think?
Well, I don't think he's going to ever have a good name for half the country, that's for sure. But I disagree with that he needs to just be the godfather to some extent. I definitely understand where you're coming from, Al.
Yeah.
And I think there's a good argument to be made that Trump's ego and his personality, the sensitivity, and the fact that he often holds on to things and won't let go of them, makes him problematic. And I don't think his character is going to change in order to just sit back and be the godfather. I just don't think that's within his character. So, I mean, I'm just trying to be realistic here.
Well, the guy's almost 80 years old. I think that he might reflect a little bit differently. He's a very successful man in America, both in the building industry, the commercial real estate industry, and also in the golf industry. I mean, you can't forget that. And if he came back and, you know, came on television basically and said that for the good of the country, we've got some pretty good people out there. Ron DeSantis, I'll just use him as an example, is a pretty good guy. And I would like to say that I want to study all the candidates that we have, and then I'm going to give you an opinion as to what I think about each one of them. And I think if he did that and really took an administrative godfather role, that would be great, Jim.
Well, I'm going to say that what I believe is going to happen, regardless of who's the candidate,
okay,
that the corporate media that are basically the mouthpieces for the Democratic Party, that the tech industry, which is actually completely controlling the agenda out there, silencing voices, going very progressive ideologies,
yeah,
in order to gain control, and the Democratic Party itself will do whatever they can to crush whatever candidate comes forward from the Republican side. So whether you have a Trump or a DeSantis or a Nikki Haley or as you mentioned earlier off mic, Liz Cheney, no matter what, they are going to be crushed by,
yeah,
those three very powerful voices and entities that control most of the information out for people to have. So,
well, I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that, but I think the Republican Party has to really put that front and center, and they have to somehow change that. I think it really, as I said months ago, I think it's a question of globalism versus nationalism.
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah, it is the problem.
It is, and I agree with you, and the problem becomes that many of the Republican leaders, I mean, this election was not real. Trump was not on the ballot.
No, of course not.
But the leadership of the Republican Party, Ronna Romney McDaniel, just,
yeah,
to give her full name, Mitch McConnell, Kevin McCarthy, a lot of the organization, I know some of the people on the very senior membership in the RNC, in the Republican National Committee, they're basically never Trumpers. They are very much wedded to this entire industry of the campaign. They want the power in Washington. They don't want to see things change the way that the Trump voters want to see things change. And I'll tell you, the system stood as strongly as the Democrats, the media, and the tech companies. A lot of these people stood up against those Americans that want to see a different change. They are tired of the corruption in Washington.
Yeah.
So the Republican Party itself has got to wake up and quit being the elitists and the, you know, country club Republicans, or I know better than you Republicans, just like the Democrats need to, you know, wake up and understand who they're hurting and who they're not helping in order to change the direction of the nation. Now, how hard is that? You need someone that's willing to take a lot, that's willing to fight at every turn. And that's the one thing that I will say that Trump is willing to do.
Yeah.
To much, many people's frustration, you know, and, you know, my wife gets frustrated with it. You know, I have people, the same people that are screaming, telling Trump to settle down right now are the same ones that did not support him 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
The same Republicans, because they're afraid of him, because he makes people uncomfortable.
You know, it's really interesting, and I know this is a bit of an aside, but it's really interesting. I think the main issue here with a lot of Trump's opponents settled down to one word, which is jealousy. The same type of jealousy that occurred, that was described in the Bible in Genesis chapter 26. That's what I think is going on right now in our country. Trump is a wildly successful individual monetarily. He is, I would have to say, someone you have to look up to because of his education, went to Wharton School of Business, etc., etc. He's a very successful, good-looking guy, shows well, has a great-looking wife, and has some great children, for lack of better terms. And I think that is causing a huge amount of jealousy, Jimmy, in the situation. Most of his enemies, I think, quite frankly, are very jealous of him.
Well, and he just grabs people's attention.
Yeah.
And he's very good at that.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, he has those weaknesses but it's a very tough battle that's got to be fought by people willing to stand up and fight.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, Ron DeSantis, he's done a phenomenal job. He's done a really good job. And of course, Trump and DeSantis right now are in this little kind of tit for tat. I don't know how serious any of that is.
You bet.
But Trump is trying to position himself to run. There's no question about it. He's trying to push against the possibilities of other people that might go against him. So
we got one minute.
Yeah, we'll see how this turns out. It's interesting, but what is really more interesting, in my view, is what's changing at the underneath elements in the RNC, where people are questioning McConnell's leadership, where they're questioning McDaniel's leadership in the RNC itself, and McCarthy, because you've had some very serious people come out and say, you know what, we've got to do something about our leadership because we should have won this hands down. And they were actively against many of the Trump-supported candidates and did not fund them, which actually cost them many of these races.
I think you're right.
And that was because they wanted that power.
You guys, we're going to do the top of the hour news right now, and then we're going to come back and continue on this subject briefly. Stick around.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Come back, done with the top of the hour news from all of our affiliated stations. We're going to talk a little bit right now about how we kind of believe the Republican Party is making some mistakes. Some of those mistakes are being cleared up as early as our recording date, which is today, Friday. Marco Rubio is doing some serious discussions about the party, etc., and a number of other people. My personal opinion is this whole thing it boils down to nationalism versus globalism. The Democratic Party is globalistic. There's no question about that. I don't feel that America is in a strong enough position to be globalistic right now. I think they need to concentrate on mending their own fences. Jimmy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we're in serious problems,
right,
internationally, and that's, you know, apparent from so many problems that we've got.
Yeah.
And you know, not only economic but actually military problems and the potential for threats. So what we're seeing is this external pressure and then the internal pressure, which is really dangerous when you're dealing with very organized and managed systems like the Communist Chinese.
Yeah.
So
it's very dangerous.
Yeah, incredibly dangerous,
yeah.
And it encourages and emboldens actions. The Iranians are threatening, apparently, according to some intelligence sources, whether or not we can trust those or not, threatening Saudi infrastructure.
Yeah.
That would be very problematic right now for the energy industry and for, you know, prices, as we're going to stop selling. Going to stop selling our national stockpile here pretty quick, and
yeah,
prices are going to rise, and the world's going to go through a very serious energy cost hike.
Yeah.
So, but when we go back to what's happening with the Republican Party, so Marco Rubio, as we're recording this within just a few minutes, he came out and actually called for a pause on voting in Republican leadership in the Senate for the Republican Party. That means Mitch McConnell's on the ropes. And
yeah,
I'll tell you, there is a tremendous amount of frustration. He's the least liked politician in Washington. And he, according to Josh Hawley, another very influential and powerful, you know, kind of populist senator from Missouri, who's a very bright young guy.
Yeah.
He says, hey, you had no plan, Mitch. You just wanted to take power and you couldn't articulate what we're going to do with it. And
yeah,
that's why people don't trust you. And he's saying that Rubio's calling for a different vote. You've got a number of very influential Republican House members saying, wait a second, Kevin McCarthy, we're not there. And that reflects basically the frustration with the potential that they should have won a very large majority in this House race.
Yeah.
And we failed to do it. And again, it's Republicans tubing themselves because they look at the world from like what the New York Times and Washington Post think and say, and they got to stop doing that. They got to stop listening to MSNBC and the network news and start listening to the people on the street and the frustrations. And the party just didn't do that.
No.
The organization, the Republican National Committee, and these senior leaders did not do that. So, Al, I think that the population is moving more towards Trumpism, whether you agree with Trump or not,
right,
with nationalism, with bringing back industry, with closing the borders, with providing security. The population is moving in that direction.
You bet.
When Washington is in this big fight to protect their own interests.
Yeah. Well, I think Trumpism, quite frankly, I mean, one of the reasons I supported Donald Trump so strongly back in 2015 is, in my mind, Trumpism back in those days and even today is synonymous with nationalism. And I believe that America is not strong enough yet at this point to concentrate on anything but nationalism. China and Russia, for example, are just two very formidable foes. And I think if we don't build up the strength of our country, we're going to be under their thumb. I really agree. I really believe that, Jim.
Well, and the weaker we get right now with,
yeah,
you know, internal division and then really bad foreign policy mistakes. And then, of course, you know, Biden comes out and says, hey, we're back. Well, you know what? It looks like the incompetence is back. And most people just can't depend on the United States outside. You know, very, very few can depend on,
yeah,
the policy consistency. And that was proven after Afghanistan.
Yeah.
We left too many allies hanging. We left too many people, literally left them on the ground against an enemy that we'd fought for 20 years, wasted.
And there was nothing. America wasn't strong enough, quite frankly, just to go in there and say, you know, we're going to blow you off the face of the earth if you don't let us get these people out right now. And
right.
And Biden did not have, he didn't have the ability to say that.
No, they are focused on climate change.
Yeah.
They're focused on agendas that give them political power and,
right,
personal control over people. They're focused on staying wealthy and rich by supporting corporate interests in relationships with trade with China.
Yeah.
They're missing the mark on developing a more positive relationship with a, you know, challenged but democratic India.
Yeah.
They're missing the mark on pushing more stronger relationships with the countries in Eastern Europe, former Soviet states like Poland and Hungary,
yeah,
that really push back against that authoritarian mentality. And they're bowing to, you know, France and Germany, which, you know, have, you know, completely different types of political systems. You know, Giorgia Meloni in Italy is someone that we should be working with, but the yeah. Biden administration is disparaging them. They yeah. undermine Bolsonaro in Brazil, who was very strongly supportive of Trump and nationalism and protecting his country, but they helped undermine his election. So very dangerous policies pushing leftist ideologies and using tech industry, using the media, and using these climate, you know, efforts to actually control people's lives
yeah.
rather than improving them.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you 100%. By the way, somebody who should think about improving itself, or an entity that should try to think about improving itself, is Great Britain at this point in time. The headlines this morning were GDP of Great Britain decreased in the last measurement.
Yeah, so they're negative GDP. We went 2 quarters negative GDP. It's funny how the media is saying, oh, they're going to go towards recession. And yeah. we ignored the fact that we went recession for a little bit. We've got a little bit of positive growth. And then you had this information yesterday, 7.8% inflation, only 7.8% when it was expected to be 8. So the market, you know, jumped way up there.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Here's the reality. 2 days after the election, I got gas today. It was 10 cents more than it was on Monday.
Yeah.
That 10 cents more a gallon. You're going to see stockpiles. We stopped selling out of the national stockpile, the national fuel stockpile, and you're going to see prices start to go up. You're going to see a lot of pressure with the Ukrainian war continuing.
I think you're right about that.
We're not, inflation still 7.8%. And oh, by the way, that's year over year, but a year ago it was at 6%. So
yeah.
We've got tremendous inflation problems still, you know?
We do. And that should be, and that's when you get back to nationalism. That should be one of the administration's highest priorities, is to take care of that. And you should start it with energy, in my opinion. And what that means is, that means basically that the direction towards green energy perhaps should be a little bit developed downward, because we need to be energy efficient, quite frankly, as we were under the Trump administration.
Well, and absolutely. And when Biden comes out yesterday to brag about his successes and
yeah.
his actually losing the House more than likely, and he says we've got to continue down the same road without changing when 40% or when 60% of the population's against him right now.
You bet.
I just don't know how that
you
works.
Got to cut off, Jimmy. You guys, we're going to be right back to wrap up the show. KER Politics. We're going to go to the international level to do this. We're going to talk, first of all, a little bit about what's going on in Ukraine, which is something that should have never happened, in my opinion. And then we're going to go on and we're going to talk a little bit about the situation between Iran and Saudi Arabia. Starting with the Ukraine, it's just getting messier and messier. Jim, you want to elaborate?
Yeah, so right now, the Russian Ministry of Defense has announced that they've withdrawn, and General Sorokin, the commander in the for the Ukrainian special military operation for Russian forces, has announced the withdrawal from Kherson. That's coming back across, going from the west side to the east side of Dnipro River.
Yeah.
They had about 30 to 40,000 soldiers on the west side of the river. They're having to go through two narrow bridges in order to cross the river to get back. The Ukrainians right now are hammering them with MLRS, multiple launched rocket systems with artillery, and the Russians are having major, major losses in that particular area. Yeah. What's critical about Kherson, it's the kind of the linchpin for control of the narrow choke point to the Crimea Peninsula. So there's two major MSRs, main supply routes that cross through from the eastern controlled Russian areas of Ukraine that go down to resupply the Black Sea Fleet and all the forces in Crimea.
Yeah.
The Ukrainians, by actually moving in Kherson, and they haven't actually taken the city, but the Russians are withdrawing. Once they get control of that west side of the river, they actually have artillery range to those choke points on the Crimean Peninsula. That's very problematic strategically for Russian forces, for resupply and for protecting Crimea, because you could easily cut, if you can cut that off, you've isolated all the forces on the Crimea Peninsula, with the exception of the one bridge that was, bombed a month or two ago.
Yeah.
The resupply route there. And that's easily taken out. So this is a difficult loss for Russian military forces. They are, there's different fighting going on in different places. There are some gains that they're making in some areas in the Donbass, but for the most part, it looks like they're taking very significant losses as they put in their reserve and the call-up troops.
Yeah.
To the point of, in some cases, 700 to 1,000 soldiers a day in losses. Yeah. That's hard to stomach.
Yeah, it is.
And large amount of equipment. So it's tough. It's going to be tough for Russian forces. It's going to be tough for Putin. And here's the problem that happens militarily often. No general wants to be responsible for failure, right?
No,
they just don't.
Of course not.
And in an authoritarian system, no general wants to admit failure, because if they admit failure, they're liable to be axed and potentially even worse. And
yeah,
this has been the case throughout history, certainly within the Russian and the Soviet system. So it's a system that's actually quite corrupt. It has been forever. Most militaries have some legacy of that same type of mentality.
Yeah.
Nobody really wants to admit failure, and they don't want to count accurately. But if you're actually losing large numbers of forces and you're having to pull back and you're trying to make it look good, that could be very difficult for strategic decision-making back at your political leadership level.
Yeah.
And this is what happened in World War II with Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
Adolf Hitler had the, basically what became the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah.
A very large, what he thought was an offensive that would push the Allies back off the continent, because his generals were telling him that they had this unit and that unit and these divisions. So he was making decisions to maneuver large forces into there. Those units were actually at much lower levels of combat effectiveness than were being reported.
Yeah.
And so ultimately it cost him not only the battles but the war. And the same potential problems for the United States in Afghanistan, this goes round and round for military actions. If you aren't accurate in your information providing to the leadership, then they're going to make decisions that are negative to their country.
You bet. I have to agree at this point with, disagree, I'm sorry, at this point with two of my favorite bloggers, and that would be Gordon and Out of the Box. And the reason I really disagree with them is, regardless of the reason for Putin going into taking his country into Ukraine, I think that it really showed how big his Achilles heel is. His Achilles heel being pride. Would you agree, Jim?
I think, strategically, Putin had justifications. I've talked about it many times to go in there. And I do agree with you that that he was overconfident in his abilities to.
Yeah.
And I've said from the beginning, and he lost before he started.
Yeah.
And when you look at the numbers, now the Ukrainians have lost a lot, potentially somewhere close to 100,000 casualties, but the Russian offensive forces have lost 100,000 casualties as well. That's not a success. That you just can't call that a success. They've lost more troops in this 9-month period than we've lost in Afghanistan and Iraq by fivefold.
Yeah.
And they've done it in a few months. That's not success.
No.
And their ability to control these areas it's going to be very difficult, even if they were somehow able to stabilize.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't look like that there's a strategic success rate to get what they wanted. And in fact, we know that we've expanded NATO to Sweden and and Finland. Ukraine has put in their application to NATO. That will not benefit them, regardless if that was the trigger point for it's ultimately not going to be successful for him. If in fact if Ukraine becomes a NATO ally. So as much as everybody was hoping, and some of the people I can't really support it, but the people that were supporting that Putin had some success against the globalists and against the Western infidels, that it just doesn't look good.
No. Jim, we're down to less than 3 minutes. Actually, we've got about 2 minutes and 20 seconds left. I want to touch on the situation between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Iran is getting very, very close to Russia. Saudi Arabia, in spite of the fact that they cut us off basically in terms of oil, is, I think, closer to the United States than it has been in a long time. So what you have is you got Saudi Arabia and the U.S. and you got Iran and Russia. That's a very dangerous situation.
Well, and Iran has been providing Russian military support.
You
They've
bet.
Been giving them drones, but they've also been providing them, oil and fuel. There's been a lot of inner trade with many different policies.
Yeah.
Iran's under intense pressure from domestic problems right now.
Yeah, they are.
And usually what happens when an authoritarian leadership is under internal pressure, they find an external enemy.
You bet. And that's exactly what's going on, yeah.
Saudi Arabia and Iran have been in a proxy war in Yemen for now quite a few years, almost 20. The Iranians have not been shy about, Yemeni, their supported enemy groups firing rockets into Saudi Arabia for infrastructure. If in fact they're successful, and I'm certain that the Russians would be semi-supportive of this, if they can cause more disruption to the global energy supply with hitting Saudi infrastructure, that's going to force prices back up, which would help fund Russian activities and maybe force a change in Western European policies to support Ukraine.
Yeah.
And maybe seeing a global gamesmanship right now with that type of action.
All I think of when I look at all the gyrations that are going on around the world, now we got Iran and Saudi Arabia, and you got Russia and Ukraine, etc.
Don't forget North Korea.
And North Korea, when you have all of that going on, I think about what Rodney King said so many years ago. Why can't we just get along? And I would maintain...
It's not human nature.
Yeah, it's not... No. Because God gave us free will, in my opinion. Jimmy, it's been fun doing this show. Be curious to see what the listeners think about my opinion about Trump.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.